We now bring to these microphones David James. This is an opportunity for you to eavesdrop on a conversation between the two of us as we talk about an issue that could be of great concern to you as a born-again Christian and relating to your walk with Jesus Christ. We'll take a biblical approach to all of the issues, so I'm glad that you could join us for this conversation today. David, we always receive several questions from our listeners, and this week, one of our listeners had a couple concerning the millennial kingdom. Give us the information about that email.
Sure, Jimmy. One question was, will the millennial Jerusalem be on the new earth, or will it be a different Jerusalem? So during the kingdom, Jerusalem will be the same city as it is today, although I would say it has to be restored because of the tribulation judgments and the earthquake. And then it will be the world capital during the millennial kingdom. And there will be a Jerusalem on the new earth with another Jerusalem, the new Jerusalem descending from heaven, apparently being above the new earth. And since the present creation will be destroyed, we don't know if the Jerusalem on the new earth will be different or if somehow the Lord will preserve it, because things involving the millennial temple are said to be forever. Now, the second question may be a bit more controversial for some, but I think you and I are in agreement on this, as are a lot of dispensationalists, and that is, will there be animal sacrifices on the new earth? So let me first deal with the millennial sacrifices in the millennial kingdom. And in an Israel My Glory article about this topic, the author writes, people often ask if Jesus' sacrifice was the only efficacious once-for-all sacrifice to expiate sin, that's based on Hebrews 9:12, why should animal sacrifices, which could never take away sin, be offered in the millennial temple during the millennium? So he answers by saying that those sacrifices will be a memorial and will also remove ceremonial uncleanness and prevent human defilement of the millennial temple, because the Lord will dwell on earth in the midst of sinners. And then we don't have time to get into the details, but I would say, based on passages in Isaiah, Ezekiel, Zechariah, and Revelation, and perhaps other places, it seems that those sacrifices will continue on in the new heaven and new earth in eternity future as well.
Well, David, this week we've been following a couple of stories about the Roman Catholic Church. And as most of our listeners know, you recently taught a course on Catholicism, and I thought it would be good for you to share a bit about what got you started studying and teaching on this course.
Well, yeah, Jimmy, I've been at it a long time. My wife and I were saved back in 1984, and I had a mostly unchurched background growing up, but my wife grew up in a Catholic home and in a largely Catholic community where we now live, and her mother had converted to Catholicism when she married my wife's father, as that was a requirement to be married in the church before the Vatican II Council, which happened in the 1960s. And my wife attended a Catholic elementary school and then graduated from an all-women's liberal arts school just 3 miles from her home, and that school is called St. Mary of the Woods College. And the St. Mary's campus is also home to the Sisters of Providence, which is a teaching order, and they are known in the area for their liberal feminism and their extreme environmentalism. And since many in my wife's family and most of our mutual friends were Catholic, I really wanted to understand what they believed. And so just a few months after we were saved, we found a Roman Catholic bookstore in Indianapolis, and I bought my first catechisms there back at that time. And so I've been studying and teaching about Roman Catholicism primarily from Catholic sources ever since.
Well, that's a great background to be able to discuss the issue. I'm glad you have that and have been not only talking to us about it, but teaching many as you travel around the country and around the world. Well, David, let's get to the stories coming out of the Vatican. One was about a new euro coin, which is the currency, of course, for the European Union. And it was minted by Vatican City to commemorate Earth Day. I think both of us were a bit concerned and disturbed when we heard about this.
That's right. This was an article carried by the Catholic News Agency last Friday, and they described the coin this way. The 10-euro silver coin marks the 50th anniversary of World Earth Day. The front of the coin is the image of a pregnant woman embracing her round belly, which looks like a globe, and stalks of wheat are in her hair. And the article went on to say this. The image on the coin has been compared to carved wooden figures of a pregnant woman that were on display in churches and at events during the Vatican's 2019 Synod of Bishops on the Amazon. And those figures, referred to by Pope Francis and others as Pachamama, that's the name that is given apparently in an Amazonian dialect, were said by some to depict an Andean fertility goddess, while Vatican spokesmen characterized them more vaguely as symbols of life. So, Jimmy, the first thing I thought when I saw it, before I read the article, was that the pregnant woman was Mary, and there were two reasons for this, that I thought this. First, the Catholic Church holds that the woman in Revelation 12 is Mary, and on the coin, the stalks of wheat coming from her hair on this coin, they sort of give the feeling of stars over her head, as in Revelation 12. And the Catholic Church has a long history of bringing pagan imagery into the church. For example, the mother-son theme, which comes out of Near Eastern religions. And I also think this is an intentional Marian imagery because they teach that Mary is the Queen of Heaven, the Mother of the Church, the second Eve, and the source of all grace. And since Vatican II, they also teach that the Catholic Church is God's grace of salvation in the world, making it possible, theoretically, for anyone to be saved no matter what their religious beliefs.
Well, and that last point that you just brought up helps us to understand another of the controversies that the Pope has been involved in over the years, and this one is about even atheists going to heaven. Did not the Catholic Church used to teach, David, that you had to be baptized into a Catholic Church to be saved?
You're right, Jimmy, but as I said, that really all changed with Vatican II in the 1960s. So Vatican II was the last council of the Catholic Church, and it introduced a massive shift in the attitude of the church toward other religions. Because of the infallibility of the bishops, called episcopal infallibility, this Catholic doctrine and all Catholic doctrines cannot change by definition, because if something is ever true, then it must always be true. If it's ever right, it must always be right. And with some sleight of hand and mental gymnastics, I would say, Vatican II expanded the role of the church in the world, meaning that everyone on the planet is within the scope of God's saving grace. And since the Catholic Church teaches a works-based salvation, replacing faith with faithfulness and truth with sincerity, if someone sincerely lives out what they believe, whatever that might be, then that person could potentially be saved. And you know, Jimmy, based on my understanding of the Vatican II documents, which I have read, for years I've taught that it's better to be a good atheist than a bad Catholic. And in fact, back in 2017, CNN ran an article that had this headline: Pope suggests it's better to be an atheist than a bad Christian. So they actually come out and say this.
You know, it's interesting. You have mentioned in the past the infallibility of the bishops. And I understand, of course, not knowing that much about the Catholic Church, for example, like you do, but that the Pope is the Bishop of Rome. So what happens when he makes a statement that comes in conflict with the teaching of the Church? For example, this week, the Pope said he endorsed civil union laws for same-sex couples. What about that?
Well, the infallibility of the bishops and papal infallibility, which is a subset of that, is something that most people probably don't really understand. So this doctrine means that when bishops make a formal decision as a group, or when the Bishop of Rome personally makes a formal declaration that something is true and must be believed, then God protects them from error. Now, this doesn't mean that everything the Pope says or writes is without error, or that his opinions are always right or even been guaranteed to be in line with the official teachings of the Catholic Church. And in fact, popes have made infallible proclamations only twice in history. The first was in 1854 concerning the Immaculate Conception of Mary, which they say preserved her from all sin, that she couldn't sin. And the second was in 1950 concerning Mary's bodily assumption into heaven. And so this recent statement about civil union laws for same-sex couples was a quote from a new documentary in which the Pope said this: homosexual people have a right to be in a family. They're children of God and have a right to a family. What we have to create is a civil union law. That way they are legally covered. But, Jimmy, not only is this against church teaching, he seems to contradict himself, because in 2010, when he was cardinal in Argentina, he said this: there are absolutely no grounds for considering homosexual unions to be in any way similar or even remotely analogous to God's plan for marriage and family. So I would say he's a very confused individual and confusing the church as well.
Yes, he certainly is. And you ought to go back and listen to some of his statements there in the past in Argentina. Well, David, as we wrap it up for today, what are some of the things that we need to keep in mind if we're endeavoring to try to reach Catholics for Jesus Christ, or even to disciple some Catholics who have already been saved but are still in the church?
Well, here's what I share with students as I wrap up the course that I teach, wherever I may be teaching it around the world. So these sort of a list that I give to the students right there at the end of the course. So one, develop personal relationships, because people aren't projects. Another, don't assume all Catholics believe the same thing, because they don't, even though they're supposed to. Another is be knowledgeable and capitalize on areas of theological agreement, like the deity of Christ and his death and resurrection. Another would be define your terms, because they can have different meanings for Catholics. For example, the term grace. Encourage them to think through what they believe and compare that to the Bible. Ask leading questions and be humble enough to give them time to answer. Also, realize that at first they actually may become better Catholics because that's all they know. Also, you need to understand that conflicts may develop, and I've known some who've actually been disowned by their families who have left the Catholic Church. We also need to be kind and patient and don't give up, because evangelism and discipleship, they're not the same thing. So we need to focus on evangelism first and not get drawn into debates. And speaking of that, remember, you're not trying to win a debate. You hope to win the heart and mind and soul of that person that you're talking with, that you have a relationship with.
David, those were great points as it relates to try to evangelize a Catholic and then help them to grow in the Lord and ultimately come out of that church that is going to be a part of the One World False Church, Revelation chapter 17. And by the way, those same points would be applicable for others that we're trying to lead to the Lord as well. Great, great statements, David. Great research. Thank you for your insight on this subject. And I'll give you a week to prepare, because we'll have another issue to discuss next week, my good friend.
Great. I'll look forward to it, Jimmy. Thanks so much.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'll open the Bible and then put all the reports together from my broadcast partners. And we'll take a look at the book and see how these current events are actually setting the stage for Bible prophecy to be fulfilled. That's all ahead right here on Prophecy Today.